Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
It is Thursday, and so that would lead you to believe that the Mensa brothers are going to join me, and they are joining me from originally from the Empire State. And currently residing in Kansas, Will Costantini. Will, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Mac. Hey, two things.
Yes.
It snowed in Kansas City on Monday. So we're deep into the fall. And item two, I need to compliment the host. I was listening right at the end of the last hour and heard one of the greatest comments ever. As you were talking about the, social media and people posting and being responsible and then talking about what's in the comments section. And the quote is, the gong show that is the comments section. I thought, so well done.
Well, you know, Mike Musselman used to say, what was his comment? The greatest statement that it is necessary to end the existence of the planet is found in the comment section of anything. Joining me from the Nutmeg State to the Pennsylvania and now in Southern California, Jeff Kenny. Jeff, how are you?
Good, Mac. How are you?
I'm all right. Now, I don't know where Tim is. He's not answering. He's not coming up on text. Maybe he's here now. Tim Lynch, I think, just, or maybe not. Are you there, Timmy?
I sure am, buddy.
Oh, yeah. Say it like, yeah, I've been here the whole time. What the hell, man? Why don't you answer your phone?
I was sitting here blissfully unaware that you were texting me. Sorry, man.
Oh, all right. All right. So, Tim Lynch. Tim, where were you born?
Honolulu, Hawaii.
Oh, from the Aloha State. Tim Lynch, currently residing in Texas. All right. To the subject matter we go. Secretary Modley ripped the current SecDef a new ass and said, these numbers and this Battle Force 2045 is a bunch of bullshit. As Modley kind of like comes back into public view after his, I think it's a standard, mea culpa, public apology, whatever he did. And then you go silent for, I don't know, 90 days, 120 days. And then you begin to emerge out of the darkness. So, Tom Modley, former acting SecDef, infamous for his little 1MC speech aboard the USS Theodore Roosevelt, much of which was true, although he gets graded low for form and judgment. What say you as a Naval Academy graduate to Modley's criticism of Battle Force 2045?
Yeah, I would say two things. Sort of behind the scenes is it's obvious that the SecDef lost confidence in the Navy in regards to their shipbuilding plan.
Right.
And, Modley sort of goes through about what he was trying to do, but the SecDef took it out of his hands. And so the big question is, how did that happen? And then the second thing about Modley's specific comments, I think he's right on two things. Number one, he says that the SecDef's plan is strategically insignificant, i.e. it's way too far out into the future, and that fleet is required much sooner rather than 2045 or 2050. I mean, that's 25 years from now. Where were we 25 years ago? It would have been hard to imagine 25 years ago where we are today. And so it also brings me back to that that memo that we talked about months ago that the guy had written for the SecDef about, you know, if you were in 1900, who do you think the enemy was? 1910, 1920, and they couldn't predict 10 years in the future, and we're trying to run this at 25. So that's one that I agree with them. The second thing that I agree with them is, where's the political consensus or impetus to build a fleet? If there had been that political consensus or the impetus behind it, then the budget would have been there, and the SecDef would not have had to ask him, you know, who do you want me to take the money from? And you contrast that to sort of the political consensus in about 1940. You know, the fleet that won World War II in 1944 was not conjured out of thin air in 1943. There's a political consensus in 1940 and 41 with a shipbuilding budget that produced that fleet that won the war. You know, do we have that now? I would say that we don't. And the idea of just throwing something out there because you've lost confidence in the Navy to develop a shipbuilding plan is sort of folly. And I think Modley is right about that as well.
All right. Tim, your thoughts.
Do you remember when that Senator Hank Johnson asked a Navy captain if we moved all the Marines onto Guam, if it would not capsize the island? Do you remember that?
I do not.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
yeah, he was a representative.
Rather famous in Congress. And I bring that up only to point out that in the past, our uniformed leaders have shown great deference to our civilian overseers and tolerated much of their nonsense and been very patient in working with them, as far as I can remember, up until Trump. Now you've got President Trump in there. He obviously doesn't value much of the opinion of the uniformed services. He had two of the best four-star generals we know of working for him, and he dismissed them and their opinions almost out of hand. And as a consequence, now you've got this battle forth 2040, whatever the hell it is planned. And of course, the criticism against it that Will just outlined are absolutely valid, but now irrelevant, because I don't think the president trusts the generals anymore. I think he's working around them now because he's just ignoring them. And I don't think that's very good or very healthy at all.
Thoughts on the plan? Do you think the plan simply is irrelevant because the president doesn't buy it?
Not necessarily. The other disturbing part of it is, at least with this plan, it gave some context to what the commandant was doing with his force redesign, because they seemed to be complementary. So if this plan does go forward, it seems to complement what the Marine Corps is doing, and I guess that's good. It's better than the reality that we think is going to happen. But I don't know. It we will see on Tuesday who wins, and if Trump wins, I imagine they're going to go forth with this vision, and it's rather tragic. But some of the blame's got to be on the uniformed services for the way that they've been treating the president by openly flaunting his directive to eliminate I'm forgetting the terminology.
Critical race theory.
Thank you. Yeah. To eliminate critical race theory. Yeah, I mean, they openly flaunt that. Milley had no reason to apologize for going over to that church with the president. He was with the president. What do you think was going to happen? The only reason that turned into a, quote, photo op is because the press said it was a photo op. What the hell you think is going to happen if you walk over to the president? Nobody's going to take your picture? I mean, come on.
Wait,
all that stuff was unnecessary.
Take me back to, though, the article. Any other thoughts on specifically the Navy budget? And Battle Force 2045. Any other thoughts on that?
Yeah, the biggest thing that jumped out at me was they've arbitrarily cut the Navy's take by about 3 percentage points out of the DoD budget. That alone is alarming. This shipbuilding plan. We'll see how this pans out. I don't know. I don't know, because it seems to me to be a lot of wishful thinking and kicking the can down the road, but we've got a habit of doing that anyway. What's new about that?
Got it. The Lynn Wells is the guy who writes about predictive analysis and the problems associated with predictive analysis, sent a memo to Secretary Rumsfeld entitled Predicting the Future. So we've discussed that relative to Marine Corps force design, going all in on one COA, blah, 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 blah. So Will alluded to that a minute ago. I'm still trying to get him on the program. He's a fascinating guy. Jeff, how about your thoughts relative to the article?
Well, it makes me think there's more to Motley getting fired than the Theodore Roosevelt incident.
Right.
And I think that I agree with most of what he said, too, just like Will said. I think the things that he said about the Navy and all this stuff about way in the future, I always thought that also. Like, that's a little bit far down the road. It's like we should always be training for the – for like the next round of the fight we're in or for the fight that's today, not worrying about the one next year. That's how you lose the fight for today. Worrying about stuff that, you know, because of especially the uncertainty of our governmental process, who's going to get elected, you know, what constituencies they're going to try and satisfy. It seems foolish to me to just this far down the line, start quartering away bucks for stuff like that. So I agree with all that. The other thing I think is, as Tim brought up a good point, I think, the stuff about the president not trusting the military leaders. I mean, I absolutely agree with that. I think that this thing with this, you know, this race, the moves he made against the, you know, terminal race theory or whatever it's called, that basically is, you know, it's anti-American, I think. But him doing that. If he gets elected again, and I hope he does, I think you're going to see all the guys he should have fired in 2017 are going to get fired in November of 2020. And I think a lot of military people deserve to be in that cadre because, you know, Machiavelli said, if you're going to, when you first take over a new outfit and you have, it's been contentious and you have people, you know, that, you're kind of worried about fire them all at once the first day, the first 2 days, fire them all. And then don't do it again because, you know, people, that's when people hate you, when you're firing a couple people every week. And I think what President Trump tried to do, and it was the wrong thing to do, he tried to persuade all these people. He always thinks that a deal can be reached. And the truth of it is, this is a different animal. You know, when you have people who are supposed to be obeying you in the government, and they're actually working against you. Latest example is this guy who was is the chief of staff for Homeland Security,
right.
You know, who turned out to be the real, you know, anonymous guy,
anonymous
right?
Guy.
So I think that's what you're going to see. I kind of got off the subject a little bit, but just to go back, you know, to reiterate what I said, I think just like Will said, it's a little bit, and just like Motley said, it's not prudent to be. To be, you know, trumpeting something that's so far down the road.
Yeah, I think when you're trumpeting something so far down the road, I think everybody knows that that's just political posturing. I don't know if the Trump administration doesn't want to go all in because the dollars that it's going to take, and as Motley says, you got to finance this beast, man. You want to go to 355 manned and 500 total? You've got to finance this son of a bitch. You know, where is the money going to come from? And as Tim pointed out, you've already shrunk my percentage of the budget from 24 to 21. And you tell me now that you want to grow this son of a bitch? The answer is no. If SecDef was serious, they would be working on, okay, Navy, you've got to learn to deliver it on time and under budget. Because we say we want to buy 10 frigates at this cost. We wind up being able to buy 5 because there's so many cost overruns that you never deliver under budget on time. And you've got to figure out how to do that before we let loose this budget, or else we're going to budget for one thing and we're going to get another. And so I don't think it's a serious overture. I think it's something that we're going to put up on some board. We're not interested in funding it. And I think that's a problem. And I think Modley's right for calling him out. I didn't put this in the agenda, but I want to give it to you because I've seen some stuff since I sent the agenda. I want each of you to be the national security advisor for the nation of France. You just had three people stabbed to death, a woman beheaded in a church in the last 24 hours. The second such event in 2 weeks. We're about in France to get this Islamic thing going again. What do you advise the president of France, Mr. Macron, to do? Tim?
My understanding is that most of the Islamic communities are in the urban areas are located in one specific area. I think you've got to lock them down. Completely lock them down. Declare them a double COVID emergency. Don't let any of them out of the house without a mask. But you have to put a damper on this. And I think they've got to start looking at extraditing or returning a lot of these refugees or sending them someplace else, because they are actively not interested in integrating into French life. They're directly opposed and antithetical to the French cultural norms. And I don't think that they're going to be tolerated much longer in France, because they've been doing this for a long, long time. And, you know, the terrorists want to alienate the French to overreact, and the French are prone to overreact. So that's what I believe is going to happen.
Got it. And again, the first incident a couple weeks ago was, I believe, a history teacher talking about the Charlie Hebdo thing, his discussion of the cartoons that were published characters of Muhammad and the exception that Muslims in France took that resulted in his there's much discussion whether he was actually decapitated or just his neck cut severely. So I will leave it at that. But that was the first incident. So this free speech versus fundamental Islam collision in France that's going on. Jeff, your thoughts as the national security advisor to Mr. Macron?
Well, I know that France is some kind of representative form of government, but I'm not really familiar with the ins and outs of it like I am with ours. But I think the first thing you've got to do is, I agree with Tim, everybody who's in France illegally needs to go. They need to go now. That I think any country has a right to do. If you're not a citizen of a place, you know, you can do that. At the same time, they need to, whatever their legislation, pass laws that say that people who are newly made citizens, you know, they're like the first citizens in their family. And they have shown themselves to be disloyal, i.e. by murdering other citizens because of religious differences, then they can be deported. They can be their citizenship can be taken away.
Who, just the individual that does it? Because they're going to jail, or the entire clan?
No, the individual does it.
Okay.
Because I mean, I don't think you can get – I always extrapolate to the United States – the last thing we want to do is group punish people. You know, this whole thing about America, and it should be about all representative forms of government, is that every individual is responsible for themselves. And so you punish people based on what they did, not based on what their dad did or what their uncle did.
Okay, but let me ask you this. So to me, as you're the national security advisor, and I am the head of the I'm the upper house parliamentary head of France, and I'm trying to design the Deportation Act of 2020. I think that I would recommend to you, I would say, Jeffrey, what do you think if we lower the threshold for affiliation in terms of knowing? So if in any way, shape, or form you knew that this act was going to take place, you will be deported too.
Yeah, that's a sticky one, because I can see, just like in Iraq, when we had people saying this guy's a bad guy because he owed that guy money, you know, I can see a lot of people accusing people of stuff just to use it for their own devices, you know. So that's a sticky one there. But you can prove,
never knew you to be such a liberal. What the hell?
Well, I'll tell you what, since things, I mean, since things shifted here in the last 4 or 5 years to where, you know, people are being shut up for what they say and you can't say who you vote for. You know, you get your car burned out and stuff like that. I'm seeing the other side. You know, I'm seeing that everybody should be able to say what they want. However, if you're talking about murder, you know, and you're talking about overthrow, that's a crime. I mean, you know, that's not free speech. That's a crime. That's in the yelling fire in the theater. That's even worse than that, you know?
Okay, so you would counsel me, hey, Mr. Senator, why don't you go through in a very, very diligent way the laws we already have, and I bet you can dig out laws that don't get applied very often that we don't have to pass. We can simply begin to enforce those that have to deal with, you know, insurrection. But again, right. Your responsibility to report a capital crime, to me, if for the sake of a family relationship you stay silent, you're leaving too.
Yeah.
Hey, Mac.
Go ahead.
Mac?
Yes.
I want to add something real quick. Those Charlie Hebdo cartoons, I went in 2006. I had to kill some time to keep my overseas tax exemption, and I went and toured the Khyber. I went through the Khyber and came back. And I remember leaving Peshawar on Valentine's Day. And the very next day, I was staying across from the KFC in this old flea bag hotel trying to save money. The very next day, they rioted over those cartoons and burnt that damn KFC down. I was one day away from being caught up in that crap. So
why did they burn the Kentucky Fried Chicken? I mean,
they were attacking anything that was associated with England or America. And bear in mind, English is a legal language; is one of the languages.
Wait a minute, but the shit happened in France.
Oh no! I know this. They were responding to a Michael Isikoff article in Newsweek. I think it was a Friday. Matter of fact, I'm sure it was. So they just all got to the mosque and did the Juma prayers and got excited and went and torched the KFC, which was a good KFC.
Got it.
But the other thing is, if you're contemplating France,
hold on. Will, you have to. Well, Will has to chime in as a national security advisor.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. William.
Yeah, a couple things. I mean, the French Muslim population.
You know what? I'm so. I just lost a fair amount of intellectual respect for you. At that point, Will, on cue, first of all, what problem are we solving here? Are you losing your shit? That is your smart guy card.
It's because he doesn't care about France.
I'm leading up to it.
Okay.
So. I mean, the French Muslim population, the great majority of it came in probably late 50s, early 60s, was the biggest Algeria. Migration, maybe mid-60s, from Algeria.
Right. Yeah.
And so that population has been there for 50 years. And I think it was small. I think it was probably 5% or less. And I have a sense that it's been radicalized in the last 20 years from different immigration.
Right.
And so the question is, you know, is there a religious conflict in France? I don't think that there is, because France is pretty secular now. You know, you go to a French cathedral and the only thing that are there is tourists. And so the question that the national security advisor needs to ask the president is, what do we want France to be and what are we willing to fight for? Because these people are willing to fight. And I'll say the guy that got decapitated, that all started, you know where it started, Mac?
Yeah, in the Netherlands.
No, social media.
Oh,
what of course.
Social
what,
media.
What a shocker.
A guy said that his, and I'm going to get this wrong, but basically a guy on social media said that his daughter, Muslim,
right.
in the class
right.
was insulted by this guy. And he got an online mob. Someone saw that post and that mob being formed in social media in the gong show part. And took it upon himself to bring justice to this teacher. And
good
so,
segue.
So as a national security advisor, you know, France doesn't have all the individual rights protections that we do. They don't really care about a lot of that stuff. You know, what are you willing to do? But then a question is, what are your security forces willing to do as well? Because a not insignificant part of that security force is part of this Muslim immigrants from 50, 60 years ago. So they've got a bit of a dilemma. They know if they wanted to, they know where the enemy is. They live in very concentrated areas, you know, no-go areas in the big cities of France that have basically been unpoliced. And there's been a low-level war going on there for 20 or 30 years. They know where they are. What are they willing to do to attack that? And what are they willing to do to protect all citizens? Are they willing to say people can say what they want to say, freedom of speech? I don't know if they are or not. And if they are they willing to defend it? It's a good question.
All right. Yeah, no, this has been an ongoing problem in France, right? And free speech collides with fundamental Islam. You don't have the right to say that. And it's my responsibility to kill you in a very violent way. And so France and its uneasy coexistence with the elements of fundamental Islam, and we see these horrific, was that in the UK that the soldier was?
Yes.
That was in the UK, yeah. Right? Right?
Yeah. But then there was Vincent van Gogh's grandson was butchered like that way back – right after during the early 2000s, same type of thing, you know, beheaded right there, throat cut right there for criticizing Muhammad.
Yeah. So France goes through this in a huge way, and we'll now confront it again. All right. Next subject. Tim, you were going to make another comment. I'm sorry.
All I was going to say is searching for a reason to suppress them is the wrong way to do it. You bring in your Facebook and your Google reps, and they'll connect the dots for you. You just buy that information and start deporting them. I don't know why you would want to fool around with, like, you know, finding reasons to do stuff. You can just do that on the sly now.
Got it. All right.
Yeah.
Is the tide changing in the Pacific? Coast Guard cutters times three. Will be based out of Guam. One is already there. U.S., Australian, and Japanese, as well as Indian navies exercising together in a more robust form than ever. An intel agreement between the United States and India. The Philippines now going to arm their naval militia. Am I, like, deluding myself, or is there reason to hope as America continues its quote-unquote pivot to the Pacific and other nations seem to be, I won't say called to arms, but pivoting as well. Jeff, your thoughts?
Well, I don't think that you're being Pollyannish. I think it's kind of like ever since Mao went to join his mentor, Lucifer, when he died. You know, the Chinese have pretty much followed his dictum from the 1930s, where if you probe with your bayonet, if you find mush, you push in. If you find resistance, you kind of back off and reassess. So I think that with all this stuff, the reaction globally to them and their the pandemic, you know, which came from Wuhan, the thing with India and the fact that people are lining up with India and the alliances that you know you and Tim have mentioned, with the Japanese, the Philippines and so forth, and the Australians, that they may say, hey, you know, it's time to cool our jets for another century or so, or at least another decade or so.
So you don't think you don't think I'm being like Pollyann-esque? And,
you usually are. You usually are, but not this time.
I appreciate that compliment. Thank you very much, William. Your thoughts?
Could this be? I mean, all these actors know how bad the Chinese are, and that they threaten them immediately, but they weren't really willing to do anything because perhaps they didn't have a trusted partner. And now maybe that they trust the current leadership in the United States that is actually willing to confront China, that people are willing to band with us to do it. You know, how reliable of an ally has the U.S. been over the last X number of years for a lot of different countries? I'm not sure. When you look at us from the outside, we've been an overly reliable ally.
I know
a lot of things.
I know the answer to that. We've been a horseshit ally, right?
Yeah, but maybe we've gained some credibility on China based on the actions of the current administration. I give Pompeo a lot of credit for that, actually.
Yeah, me too.
And so
I don't think you're pronouncing China correctly.
China.
China. No, let me tell you, he gets full marks, though, right? Grant Newsham, been out there for a long time. He comes on the program every couple weeks, and he says, look, for the first time in decades, the United States is standing up on its hind legs and not walking away from commitments. You know, the Obama administration, you know, the Philippines wins its case in the law of the sea against the Chinese, and you know, the Obama administration doesn't say shit.
Right.
Don't want to fuck that up the means, don't want to fuck up the business relationship that's so significant to the United States, right? And then my favorite though is Orrin Hatch, conservative senator, when President Trump lays on those initial tariffs and Hatch was still in office, says, "This is really concerning. I'm a free trader, and this is concerning." Like, are you fucking kidding me, Orrin? Do you not know what free trade is? Or do you struggle with math? Like, what fucking part of this don't you get? And we've gone down that road and been a shit partner in the Pacific for a long time. So, Will, I thought I'd just clarify that for you.
And that goes to another issue, too.
Hold on. Will's not done, Jeffrey.
Okay, I'm sorry.
I can't thank you enough for clarifying my very clear remarks.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Jeffrey?
Well, I was going to say that brings up another issue when you mention Orrin Hatch. I mean, the whole character of the of our government and the people who work in D.C. and who support it and all this stuff, what, you know, is euphemistically known as the swamp, they got their own, you know, priorities that don't have anything to do with not only the bulk of the American people but their own constituents.
Right.
So here's this guy's best friend when he was in Congress was Ted Kennedy. Ted Kennedy. I mean, the guy who engineered more anti-American stuff than any Americans, you know, that I can think of since maybe, you know, those traitors in the 50s. And, you know, so it's like and now Trump is getting rid of that stuff. And he's saying, hey, what this tells me, what you guys were talking about regarding the, you know, CETO and, you know, and all that stuff, ASEAN, is that they think Trump's going to win this election. And maybe the Chinese do, too. Otherwise, they might just say, hey, you know, we don't think this is going to go good because the next guy is not going to be like Donald Trump. I think it's safe to say if it goes that way, you know,
if it goes that way, the yeah, you know, I don't like to be Pollyanna, but at some point, I mean, the Intel agreement with India, and you know, India's always steered its own very independent way from the United States.
Yeah.
And, you know, India, 1.4 billion people with no, you know, one child only plan. And so, that interesting, the exercise has gone on, but not in, I believe, the robust nature that it's going on this year. Australia certainly on the outs with China relative to their trade war. So I don't know. But I think, and we'll go around one more time, starting with Will. The Coast Guard cutters doing enforcement in the Western Pacific, that's a little bit of a new card, and that means, right, coasties confronting Chinese, quote-unquote, fishing vessels, that has the potential to be a little bit of a friction point. William? Unmute yourself.
I said, I don't know how much capability there is there. They're sending, I thought, three cutters, 150 feet. Biggest thing on there is a 25 millimeter. I mean, it's I think it's more of a statement. Yeah, symbolic. And I'm not sure how the U.S. Coast Guard I just don't know how you do something on something we consider the high seas, and they consider, and the Chinese consider their territorial waters. It seems a little bit odd, but I think it's part of this. We're trying to do something to show our potential partners out there that we're going to get some skin in this game.
So, for instance, in the South China Sea, inside the Philippine Economic Exclusion Zone, which extends 2 miles off their coast, right, agreed to everybody that's part of the UN, the United States Coast Guard assisting the Philippines to enforcing their rights, and this on a issue that's already been resolved at the court of the law of the sea. I think what you're saying is it's not much of a capability, but it in my opinion, it is potentially the first real direct confrontation between the United States and China.
Yeah, and maybe I thought I read in the article that those cutters were going to Guam.
Based out of Guam.
Yeah. Guam's, I mean, it's a pretty good jump for a 150-foot ship, boat, cutter to be doing something in the Philippines. Maybe they're going to deploy. I don't know.
All right. More to be, okay, you're skeptical. I got it. Tim, thoughts on that?
Well, the fishing fleet of China is estimated to be about 16,000 vessels. And just last August, 340 of them invaded the Galapagos Islands, and Ecuador and Peru were trying to scare them the hell off. They turned off their transponders. They deplete the fishing stocks. They operate from the Korean Peninsula down into West Africa. And last year, it was Palau. The Palau Islands were trying to get them the hell out of there. So there's lots of business for the Coast Guard to tend to as far as enforcing international fishing fleets, because they have processing boats, restock boats. Those things travel as a complete unit and stay out for a long time, and they're hell on the environment. So one of the things I think we should do is make the UN pay for us for doing this. But there's got to be other people joining us, other Coast Guards that have the legal authority to board fishing vessels. Because Will's right. They've got a 25-millimeter chain gun, so they can't take on a Navy vessel, but they can sure as hell board fishing vessels, and they're good at it. And I think we should see more of them out there. But that's a hell of a statement, because we don't know what's going to happen with the Quad. You know, we can screw up an alliance as good as anybody. Hopefully we're paying attention and make it a priority. I don't know that we are. It might threaten diversity or something important. I don't know. But if we nurture that thing well, we've got a nice vice to put pressure on China. But we've got to be assisted in that policing mission with the fish stocks of the world, because it's a serious problem what China's doing ecologically.
Well, I'll tell you what, and to me, like something stupid like fishing rights, right? And somebody raiding and annihilated the fish, that impacts your economy. If you're Ecuador, you know, I mean, that's a big deal.
It impacts poor people.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. It's racially discriminatory. Well, it's all the bad.
I'm not sure that fish and eating fish discriminates, but I understand what you're saying. Jeffrey?
We worked a lot with the Coast Guard. My last job in the Marine Corps at EOTG on the East Coast there for 2 months, and particularly in support of VBSS, which VBSS, for folks out there listening, it's a visit board search and seizure. Basically what it is when there's a merchant ship up there or some other kind of vessel that for one reason or another we think there's bad actors on the thing, we take it down. And once we take these ships down, they're not easy because, there's obviously you want to discriminate against innocent people who are on board that platform, you know, advice bad guys. That ship is moving. The seas could be rough. I mean, the basic ways you do it are by helo or by surface, and or both at the same time.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the most butch video from the American military, as well as the Department of Homeland Security, which the Coast Guard is a part of, there's a video that of a Coast Guard guy jumping on to one of those submersible subs.
Right.
And banging on the hatch with his, and he's like all geared up. He's screaming and yelling. He's banging on the hatch with, I think, is it his pistol that he's banging on it with? I mean, he's.
Yeah, I think so.
Right. And it's straight up butch. I think that if that isn't the number one recruiting tool of Coasties, they need to call up some Marine Corps recruiters and figure out how to do it.
Yeah, they are very good. I mean, they're like
old. Thank you.
Like when we talk about, you know, in the past we've talked about like collisions the Navy's had and so forth, and what we think that might be indicators of. They're not that at all. They're like the old time Navy. Like my dad was on a destroyer at the end of the Second World War. They're like that. You know, they're very into it, and like they know the law. Just like the U.S. Navy knows the law of the sea when it comes to doing these things, and the Navy always insists on doing a query first, which basically says to the target ship, we're coming at you, you know, but it's a stupid thing to do, but they always do it because it's a legalese. And what it does, it keeps you from having to do this difficult job because
right.
it's easy to. But with the Coast Guard, they have the old Marine Corps view that we used to have where, look, lawyer, your job is to tell me how I can bend this law to do what needs to be done for the best interest of the United States, i.e. killing those fuckers on board that boat.
Get me to yes. Get me to yes. Don't tell me no.
Yeah, right. And they had a bias for action that we admired, you know.
Right.
And so that's my – and so I agree with Tim that maybe they wouldn't be used, you know you know, in a big kinetic way, but I'll tell you what, man, it seems to me the Chinese, the character, you know, and they're all encompassing approach that boarding ships and checking out, you know, docks and stuff like that. And, you know, uncovering nefarious gangs of guys, you know, pretending to be something they're not would be right up their alley.
Yeah, I think that making that an international issue and raising that when you already have, right, settled, you know, law of the sea law behind you is just another way to get after the Chinese and to expose them for the fucks that they are. Next topic. I don't know if you guys had a chance to listen to it, yes. But I sent you a little clip. And I thought it was pretty interesting. I'm still in the afterglow of watching the social media, all right? And this guy, Tristan Harris, I was searching around for different things. I saw this broadcast that I played in the first hour today, so if you want to listen to it, you can find the link in that's already up. You can find the link there. But in the last 5 minutes, he starts talking about social media and national security. And he talks about social media as an existential threat. Now, if I were to venture to say what political party, you know, or what political persuasion that an internet guy is, I would not say he's a conservative, although he may be. But he brought up, you know, the discussion of, you know, if you tried to do what other nations are doing with a plane, the DOD would get involved and, you know, we'd be in a shooting war. But somehow or other, you can electronically invade somebody, manipulate inside their nation, and no harm, no foul. So I'd be curious if you had a chance to listen to it. Tim, we'll start with you. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it was really interesting. And it brought up some information. And we've been talking about some of this before because I remember talking about a book I was reading, The Coddling of the American Mind, where they brought up the stats and suicide and suicidal ideation in 11 to 14 year old girls, how right. they went skyrocketing in 2011 when social media and access via smartphones married up and became popular. So we've been aware that it's a problem. I think it's a bit overstated because I don't pay a whole lot of attention to what pops up in my social media feed. I'm not connected to my phone. I don't have any notifications turned on. I rarely pay attention to it. So, and my personal opinion is, and if you look into what happened with the Russians in 2016, they ended up only reinforcing success. And that success they had was mostly between, on the far left, black independent separatists, and on the far white independent separatists. And they're two of the most marginalized. That's less than 1% of the population. Those are crazy people. Who cares what they think? So I'm not that convinced that it's that pervasive and that Abe has that ability to influence in America. But I would know. You would know because you've got a high school age daughter, and that might be a completely different reality from them. Because I know one thing: the only reason why North Korea stays the way it is, and the reason that people in Russia tolerated being treated the way they were treated, was because they had a completely a fake propaganda-driven media and entertainment section dominating their social life. So that alone is of a concern to me, because I'm not concerned about the government censoring me. I'm concerned about social media censoring me and twisting things such as our election, such as with this Hunter Biden story, which is clearly newsworthy, but being actively suppressed. I'm not alarmed personally, but I don't know how to gauge the level of threat to the generations behind us. And I'd be interested in what your observations are as far as that goes.
Well, as the owner-operator of a teenage daughter, I mean, those apps that he mentioned, TikTok, you know, you walk by Colleen's bedroom and she's in the middle of some dance thing that she and a friend are doing because they're going to get put on TikTok, you know, to see how many likes and views they get. It's one of their hobbies that they do for fun, dancing, right? Blah, 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 blah. It's what they do. And again, the addictive nature of it. And then I think what's fascinating about this is his comment about, you know, who can get the furthest down the brainstem, right? In terms of my job is to addict you. So I see you're interested in the Holocaust. I'm not going to show you, you know, Elie Wiesel and thoughtful people. I'm going to show you Holocaust deniers because what? I know you're most likely to click on the hottest shit. And so I think it's fascinating in terms of the way they manipulate it, and that fake news spreads at a rate 6 times, you know, faster than real news, because it's just hotter and whiter and it's white hotter. And so who decides that? And then you can see the tone and tenor of the discourse in the country reaching crazy levels. Well, why is that all of a sudden? Because what you're seeing is crazy on your phone every day in your newsfeed. And so to me, that is all unregulated. They are treated as platforms that simply provide an apparatus. But that's not what they do anymore. Right. So anyway.
I got to confess to falling hook, line, and sinker for that goddamn Pizzagate thing. So I've been subjected to that too. I have to confess.
Well, you had that guy, Kyrie Irving. Went on somebody's broadcast and said he believed the Earth is flat, and later he went.
Those are easy right? to ignore. Though.
Right, I know, but he believed it, and he said I went down a YouTube rabbit hole, and video after video, and imagine that anybody who starts to Google, you know, white supremacy or critical race theory, you get taken to these crazy. And so anyway, Jeff, your thoughts on this?
Well, yeah, that was a very good, I listened to that whole thing you sent us, and I thought that was great. And here's this guy might read on this guy listening to him for like 25 minutes was that this is a thoughtful guy.
Right.
And he saw immediately, here's one thing, the first thing that jumped out at me. Number one, the total lack of any sense of responsibility in any of these people who is working on this, you know, how do you seduce people in the, you know, clicks and stuff like that, that they are connected in any way to any kind of malfeasance. And it reminded me of the Brits when they basically deliberately got all these Chinese people hooked on heroin. or not heroin then, morphine in the 19th century. They had these are religious people, you know, who, stiff collar and all that stuff, thought they were just going right straight to heaven and causing untold miseries. And I can see that same type of conceit, you know, with the people that he was talking about that he worked with. The second thing that jumped out at me about this is, well, besides the stuff that you mentioned about national security, which is, you know, obvious, you know, this stuff has a definite, it's a threat and it's a doorway to a whole nother field of conflict. But one other thing that jumped out was when he's talking about He was talking about knowing the difference between what's just being said and what's being said falsely, you know, what's being put out there. This just what someone's opinion, which is free speech, and then what someone is saying is true but isn't true, and how they need to control that. And then I was thinking about these three guys I watched on TV yesterday, you know, testifying via electronically for Congress, and they're using that phony I think they're phony. They're using, like, we have to make sure that we don't let, you know, false stuff go out, so we didn't let this thing go out about Hunter Biden, even though it's, like, been proven that, you know, yeah, the guy was doing this stuff. And they're like, but they let the Ayatollah get on there and say we're going to murder Israelis because, and then say things like the Holocaust never happened and stuff like that. So it's like, you can, it's a double-edged sword for sure. And it's something that I think and I hate. Like, I just voted yesterday, and all those propositions, I studied up beforehand, because they're kind of, you know, to everyone that looked like the government forming an agency or getting involved in anything, I voted against, you know, because I don't trust that. But I think Congress might need to be the ones to take control of these guys. First of all, don't deserve to have any kind of right now they can't be sued. They can't, like a right. newspaper or a right. TV station. I think that should go away, because, like you said, they are a platform. They're more than just a vehicle or a transmitter, for sure.
Yeah, but again, the problem is, if you've ever watched a hearing about technology, it's done under the Senate Commerce Committee, and they don't know shit about their cell phone, let alone technology. And it's just – it's humiliating and embarrassing for them to be a part of it. And it's just – you watch it and you're like, I can't believe. So I think we need to form a separate committee, right, stand up a new committee both in the House and the Senate. And it needs to be stocked with people who either come from the technology sector or who can speak technology, because – some old dude reading the questions that some staffer write. I mean, it sucks. They don't get it. And I think there's a substantial part of our nation that's at risk. And I mean, when you have guys like him saying civil war, I mean, they know, right? They know. And it's all being done for profit. Yeah. And the other part of his interview that I liked, and then Will, you feel free to unmute yourself here, is that, look, you don't pay anything for this, yet the company is worth billions of dollars. Riddle me that, Batman. Where is the money coming from? Well, the money is coming from the influence that they sell, and the way they manipulate people, and the time spent, and the addictive nature of it. And all of that is done deliberately for profit. And the more of this shit I watch, the more I think that, how the fuck can you be federally elected legislator and not have intervened in this shit yet? And the answer to me is that the Democrats won't, because big tech is thrown in with the Democratic Party.
Orrin Hatch.
Right?
Yeah.
William?
Yeah, two things about that. Number one, when General Dumford was a chairman, he went out to Google. And Google did not want to work with DOD on something. And he said to him, we're the good guys. And
famous quote.
I didn't get a response.
Famous quote. Right? Famous
quote. And then the second thing is just that.
Well, William, hold on. Simultaneously, they were working with China to try exactly. to improve a to provide what a more efficient way to track the people of China, right?
Yeah,
it was like bizarro world on steroids. It was crazy.
And the second thing, you know, that testimony yesterday, just watch it on mute. You don't even have to listen to those guys. And you see that they are above this.
Right.
You know, they truly are oligarchs. They cannot be touched. They're insulated from any downside. They don't care about any downside. And there never would be a sense of responsibility to any individual, let alone the nation as a whole. Right. And Mac, when you were talking today, talking about, you know, the senators trying to interrogate these, there were a couple that were able to narrow it a little bit.
Cruz.
But as a whole, you know, you're absolutely right. Congress is inept.
I love when you say that.
You know, Congress is inept at being able to understand what the issue is, let alone get any consensus. And then the other part of it is that consensus is not a consensus in the country. You know, there's not a lot of people that think like I do, that Steve Jobs is in the seventh ring of hell for inventing the smartphone, and Zuckerberg has got a reserved place right next to him when he gets there. I mean, they've destroyed American civil society. How long has it been? Well, you can't go to restaurants anymore, at least in California, but imagine pre-COVID. You could go to any restaurant in the land and see more than one person sitting at a table, and 8 out of 10 of those tables, people aren't even talking to each other. They're looking at their damn phones.
Absolutely.
I mean, this is a bad thing. And I don't know how you can build a consensus that it requires some kind of regulation.
I don't think you would have problem building a consensus with Republicans that it needs regulation. The problem you would have is you need Democrats, at least in part, and because big tech sides with them, they have no – what's the incentive?
Yeah, exactly.
Why?
That's consensus, though. How do you build a consensus?
Right.
Because you pull the stats on all the bad things that have happened to the youth of America – where are you going to publish them? How are you going to circulate them? You ain't going to do it on Twitter.
That would
right?
be,
you're not going to do it on Facebook.
That would be problematic.
Yeah. It's really fighting uphill. And then the other part that I would say is, who do you trust to regulate them?
Yeah, the closest thing to the people is if Congress does it, because that's the only thing people
are saying. Though, would you trust Congress to write a very broad law, which is what it would be, to be implemented by some federal bureaucrats?
No, but I mean not by choice. But what else is there? You know?
Yeah.
Well, if you take away their protection from, yeah, say that you are now a content policer, as you've demonstrated in the last election, so we will strip you of your, what is that, Article 230 or whatever the hell it is.
Yes.
Or the 230 words, whatever. We will strip you of that, and then we will let, right, all these money-grubbing legal fuckers, right, take them to court all the time, and they can slowly but surely shut off the comment section of everything and do humanity a favor, because you're responsible.
It's not going to go down that way, though. because the oligarchs got the money. Whoever writes those laws is going to be lobbyists writing the laws, not congressmen. It will be lobbyists, and the oligarchs will be challenging them from day one in court, taking it all the way up to the Supreme Court, and they'll tie it up in litigation for a decade while they're just making money hand over fist. I think you got to be a little more ruthless if you think you're going to have any impact on those guys. They can protect themselves with the law.
So in terms of ruthless, what do you mean?
I mean, you would need to, as a federal government, step in and dictate a change, not offer a law that could be contested in court. It would have to be – I don't believe you
could.
How
do you dictate a change in the United States?
The law's got to come
like you did in World War II. Like Trump just did when he went to
one
of those –
You got to have consensus.
Yeah.
How do you get
consensus? Consensus is one, and two is he just did that with one of those plants where he told him to start making respirators. I mean, you can do that.
So you say using like the COVID thing, but because they've with the COVID emergency, particularly in blue states, they have stripped us of all our rights. They can tell us.
No, you can use the 2001 anti-terrorism bill. We've covered it's covered every other fucking thing under the sun. Why can't it cover this?
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be some. It's a sticky wicket for sure. I think if that works, do it. But I don't know.
I'm just saying that you try to do it legally, you're talking about a decade of litigation. Those guys can slow you down if you try to do it by the legally. They can slow you down indefinitely.
Well, here's the four of us make up our own Google. We make our own social media. Well, I don't know what we call it. Stand the fuck by media or whatever.
I think that ultimately the explosion of destructive behavior in teens and the mental health issues those are public health issues. And if you're a Democrat or a Republican, I think those are nonpartisan issues that are begging to be addressed. And again, that's to me that's what I thought was so fascinating about that documentary. And you have people that were foundational people in these businesses who are saying who are ringing the alarm to the tune of this is a national security threat. And they don't speak that language. And when guys like that are speaking that language, to me, it's very, very interesting because it's just not something that you hear very often. All right, let's to end this thing. What are you reading, Jeffrey? What are you reading?
I have to tell you, I'm on a hiatus from reading. Because,
what?
I was doing this stuff out of Torn on Palms for Will's old company commander, who's the colonel in charge of one of his subordinate company commanders, Phil Lang, who's a great guy. It gets better every time we do this. But so I came out from there. All I did is watch TV and read stuff I already read. I haven't really, done anything. I'm going to be back out at 29 Palms next week. So, then I'll start reading.
Isn't that supposed to be good reading time?
Well, yes. But I spend a lot of time, my spare time now, sleeping. More than in my whole life ever. So, I mean, to me, fun and sleep are now synonymous terms. It's a sad state of affairs, but that's me.
Got it.
I peed this morning, and I will be fighting off the sleepies at 18:45, man.
Wow. All right. William, what are you reading?
Yeah, I'm reading the third volume of that Toll series, Twilight of the Gods.
Everybody that mentions Toll loses their mind over the guy. I don't know.
It's phenomenal. And, I picked up the third volume. So the second volume ends with the Great Marianas Turkey Shoot.
Right.
And so you think there's really not much left in the war.
Oh, yes, there is.
And he starts the book by saying, the third volume should be the shortest volume because there's not much left in the war, but it's actually the biggest volume because I had all this stuff that I just couldn't throw away. And he gets... But he gets into just some great stuff. Chapters about the submarine campaign.
Oh, yeah.
about just the logistics of the Pacific Fleet.
Who's the Medal of Honor guy, Submariner type, that just becomes like a pirate raider of the Japanese coast?
Yeah,
he was Oahu.
Oh, my God, man. That is, I mean.
Yeah.
Great name.
Oh.
Yeah, you read the exploits of some of those submarine captains, like that guy. I forget his name. His nickname was Mush.
Right.
Yeah.
Medal of Honor, 4 Navy crosses. Now, they gave things out a little bit differently back then. Like, you torpedo, like, a capital ship or better, you know, a cruiser or better, you're going to win a Navy Cross. So, but, you know, they're talking about guys who, in the conning tower,
go down.
The guy says, I can't be captured. So he just stays up there and drowns because he knows too much.
In the case of the Wahoo, right? He's sending, like, you know, in those little rafts, right? They had on
Japanese mainland.
Yeah, and they're going on this Japanese mainland, and they're blowing up bridges and shit with trains going across it, and you're watching it, and you're reading it, like, this guy's a baller, man, and he's following people, you know, to meet other people, blowing everybody up. It was like amazing. I mean, he operated with impunity as the Japanese fleet got smaller, and it's just like amazing stories.
There was the only ground operation during the war on Japan proper.
Wow,
was executed by the Wahoo.
I'll tell you what. That would be not a bad thing to be able to throw on the bar at the VFW when somebody's kicking your ass in an argument. Yeah. I might be a dumb fuck, but
unfortunately, the ship was lost with all hands.
It was.
Yeah, it was. The guy died.
Didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, but other chapters. Just look, the inter-service conflicts about getting a strategic bombing group into the Marianas that was not going to be subject to Nimitz's control. You know, it's an interesting thing. It really helped birth the modern Air Force, but they wanted that thing to be exclusively focused on bombing Japan. And they knew if they put it under Nimitz, he would disperse to do other things. Those are interesting things that I never really thought about, that the guy really, he goes into detail, but it's not boring when he does it. So it's a great series of books. Absolutely.
All right, I'm reading the first one out of 29 Palms next week. I promise. You got me motivated.
You've humiliated Jeffrey.
Well, yes. YouTube be gone.
Well done. Timmy, what are you reading?
I'm still stuck on my apocalypse book. Because I'm in the middle of doing term papers and I've got midterms and all that other kind of stuff. And I was just checking to see, I've got 2 Ian Toll books to read. I believe I've read all the James Hornfisher books about World War II that he's written. But man, I'm looking forward to that. I've got two more Toll books. I am looking forward. I'll be reading those next as soon as I get done with midterms.
I would tell you this. I've never had a book or a series of books mentioned to me as much as I've had the Toll series mentioned to me. And everybody who reads it loses their mind over, oh, hey, you got to read this. I'm like, look, man, if you're going to tell me about Toll, that's old news, okay? Find a new series of books to read, okay, man? So anyway,
He compliments Hornfisher. Hornfisher compliments him. They don't cover it the same stuff at the same angle. It's really interesting how they
that has you at hello because you love Hornfisher.
Yeah. So it's like,
hey, man, they're both young guys though. They're both young. They've graduated college in like 89, both of them.
Wow.
They used to compliment each other, you know, and get drunk together and shit. Made people buy more of each other's books.
William?
Hornfishers are great books. These are great books. The reason Jeff isn't reading anything he's not near enough anyone to steal books from their library. That's really the reason.
He's isolated.
I surprise you don't give me credit for more initiative than that, but I am getting tired.
He boosted a couple books from me in Jalalabad. I mean, he never let that habit slip.
These are vicious lies.
These are all lies.
If I ever had a book that I liked, that I knew Jeff would like, I would just buy an extra copy and let him steal that one. Because not only would he read it, he would like sweat and slobber over it, and it was not worth getting back from it.
Who would want it after that? So I could
exactly.
I'm actually listening to Viktor Frankl's Man's Search for Meaning again. So, and it's pretty short. It's only about 4.5 hours. So I'm listening to that. And then I just got a I don't know if you've read When the Tempest Gathers by Andy Milburn. But
I just got that in the mail. I got to read it.
Yeah,
that's a good book. Yeah. That's a good book.
I didn't have a chance to steal it from anybody. I got it in the mail.
Yeah, no, I got that as an audiobook. If you want a free audiobook copy, let me know, and I can make that happen. So, anyway. All right, boys. Any final thoughts before we leave today? All right.
I'll be interested to see what happens on Tuesday.
Hold on.
Yeah, I hope your prognostications are correct, because you remember what you said about the Democratic nominees' ability to win this election.
No, what did I say?
You said he will never be president. Well, and that's in the archives somewhere.
It's somewhere. You know what? 4 years ago, I did not think that Donald Trump would beat Hillary Clinton. So much so that I wasn't even watching the news, the election returns that day. Till that evening when somebody texted me and said, can you believe this? So we shall see. If Donald Trump doesn't win, it's going to be a pretty interesting fight over the Democratic Party, because there's a lot of expectations that Joe Biden is going to govern as a far-left guy. He wrote a lot of checks, and so we will see how that unfolds. You know, one more thing I want to talk about real quick, and that is I do not get the information operations that are underway now in Philadelphia. You had a man with a knife. The police are called 3 different times, I believe, on Monday. The third time that they're called, you could see his mother chasing him. He has a knife. He comes around the corner as officers confront him. He turns and he comes at them with a knife. They tell him to drop the knife, and he continues. They are absolutely right in terms of defending themselves. They have the right to apply deadly force in that situation. Question, Mac, why didn't they use a stun gun? Answer, because the city council, right, of Philadelphia hasn't funded that shit for everybody. So they did what they could do. Now, if one of them, because they're employed in tandem, if one of them had a stun gun, if it had been provided, then because Jeff's the senior guy, he looks at Will, who's the rookie, and says, hey, you grab your stun gun. I'll take my smoke wagon, right? You're going to try to take him down. If he keeps coming, then I'll step in. Got it, boss. And you deploy like that. If that's not available, you don't have that option. But in terms of information operations, you guys know that within something happening like that, within 2 hours, 90% of what happened. They have the body camera video from the cops. Yeah. They can't talk to the cops because there's some way that in Pennsylvania that this thing comes out. But when you don't get those facts out in time, what you do is you cede the narrative to other forces that are going to say, here we go, another innocent black man hunted down by cops in Philadelphia. And that's absolutely bullshit. And so yeah. I'm just curious about your thoughts about, do we not understand that there's an information war that goes on surrounding all these kind of events? And why are police departments so slow to get the truth out? Jeff?
Well, I think it's the mayor and the DA. And I think there's going to be a riot in Philly right at that time, no matter if a guy got shot or not. Now, because I think people get shot a lot, particularly in places like Philadelphia, and particularly doing things like that. Just last month, we had a guy killed about 400 yards from my house, a black guy on the street who was unarmed, but then he grabbed the cop's gun. He got shot. I don't know if you remember, Mac. Was there riots? No. Was there like a big social media thing? No. No, these things are contrived. You know, I don't think they obviously didn't plan this guy's death. I don't think they'd be, they do that. But they all the rioting and looting, burning and stuff took place about 5 miles from where this guy got shot. And it was like somebody snapped their fingers, somebody gave the word, and out in the streets they were, and right off another target and another another couple of stores there in that part of Philly. So I think and then right away, of course, Trump says, I'll send in people to go watch the polls, because obviously Philly's a dangerous place. And the DA, who didn't say a damn word about this stuff with this guy, about he didn't say what he should have been saying, what you said, because he did a good job of laying out the situation. He says, oh, if you come, you send people here to watch my polls, I got something for you legally. Well, hey, buddy, if you're the legal, you're the legal warrior, why the hell aren't you going after these people who are burning down your city? Answer, he wants them to burn down the city. He likes that. The mayor, who I am ashamed to say has the same name as me, spelled the same, he's the same type of thing. They like this stuff. There's a epistemology among these blue cities and states that the more this stuff happens, the worse it is for Donald Trump and the Republicans. And that's why it keeps going on and on and on.
All right. Will?
Yeah, item one, you said right to self-defense. It's actually a requirement self-defense.
Got it. I stand corrected. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Item two.
Information operations. There's an information war going on out there.
I know. I heard about this, and I didn't look for the video, because I usually don't, because I really don't care what the video shows. Right. My son lives in Philadelphia, and I sent him a text, and I said, hey, what's going on? He says, yeah, that's in North Philly. I live in South Philly. They won't allow that stuff down here. There's a certain ethnic persuasion that likes to control what goes on in South Philly. But then he sent me, he said, did you see the video? I said, no, I didn't see it. He says, we got to look at it. And he says, how can anyone be sympathetic to this guy? And then I watched a bunch of videos, and a bunch of the videos were out there. People were outraged, eyewitness videos, outraged that the guy got shot. So the fact that he got shot, even if they would have put it out instantaneously, there were people watching this and filming it. Go on YouTube. Yeah. You can see many versions of this video.
Yeah.
People watching this that couldn't believe that the cops shot this guy. So while in theory, I absolutely agree with you that their information operation should have been a lot faster and a lot better. But amongst a certain part of the population, it's like it doesn't seem to matter.
I agree with you in terms of it doesn't matter to them, because it's their and that's the narrative that will dominate if you don't step into that information war. And so to me, it's critical, because what you do is you strip away, the quote unquote reasonable people in the middle that will decide which way they're going to land on this thing. And if you don't get that narrative out there, you cede that ground to somebody else. But it just seems to me like they don't. Why police departments don't do this, I don't fucking know. The Minneapolis Police Department did not do that with the Floyd thing. I mean, to me, they were obviously overwhelmed, and I get that. But, hey, these are the facts. These are the facts as we know them. This happened. This happened. This happened. And this happened. This is what we know. That's 80% of we believe the story. The other 20, we can't go near. That, but you just don't see that. And I think it lends itself to parts of cities being burned down. Tim?
In 1983, a Salt Lake City police officer named Tweller published an article called The Dweller Drill in SWAT magazine, in which he had a police officer and an assailant, obviously a trainee assailant, back to back. And at the sound of a shot timer, the police officer drew and fired while the assailant ran as fast as he could until he heard the shot. The assailant could get 21 feet every time before the officer was able to get off a shot. And that became known as the Dweller Drill, which has been used as defense for police officers for 50 years now, 50 years. So there's no question in my mind that we're in the midst of an information warfare campaign, and it's going exactly how the people running the city of Philadelphia wanted to go, because you could have put a stop to this instantly. The amount of videos that you can find of knife attacks on police officers and the horrendous damage that's done to them if the attack is successful, you could find hundreds at the drop of a snap of a finger. So the defense is clear. It's a 50 years long in establishment that they were perfectly justified for shooting that guy. They, you know, good shooting on their part. They were retreating. They were doing everything they could. And so now we've gotten what we're going on for night three of rioting in Philadelphia. And the narrative is, again, the incompetence of Trump. Everybody's rioting and nobody knows anything about Hunter Biden. No, that's got nothing to do with anything. So that's what it's going to be until Tuesday. And after Tuesday, we're going to see what happens.
Got it. All right, boys. Thank you very much for the visit today. Always enjoyed it. And well done today. I enjoyed the program very much. So I hope others did too. Did you just oorah me live on the radio?
I did.
No, hey, nothing like a little fake motivation this time of the morning to get you through the day. Oorah, devil. Thank you.
Motivated. Hey, did you just DD him?
Yeah, the devil dogged him. That's a compliment.
Oh, yeah?
Look it up. World War One. Treffenhund. Exactly. Back. That's a, sir. Do you know that that's could be derogative? What? Oh, you mean our
heritage? I certainly hope so.
You mean our heritage as Marines is derogative? Oh, yes, sir. Devil, as in who the fuck said that? Sir, the former Sergeant Major of the Marine Corps. Well, you know what? Fuck that
fuck
guy.
Yeah,
exactly. Anyway, all right, boys. Have a great week, and I'll talk to you next week. There you have it.
Thanks a lot.
You bet. Those are the Mensa brothers here on a Thursday morning. Well done. Well done. Interesting. That'll do it on a Thursday edition of All Marine Radio. So, if you're just tuning in, today's show is awesome. I don't mind telling. Don't touch that dial. In hour one, you're going to hear a guy by the name of Tristan Harris. He's a tech guy, ethicist at Google, Stanford guy, and he's not, I would say, quintessentially a righty. And what you're going to hear from him is his concerns over where the internet goes, what the internet pays attention to, which is your screen time and its shareholders. It doesn't give a shit, right? It doesn't give a shit about the mental health of teenagers. It doesn't give a shit about tweens. All it cares about is addicting you to that device. And what's interesting about that is that he then takes that argument and brings it to an issue of national security. So I think you'll enjoy that. And then we take a look at just a few pieces of news. And that's hour one. And then hour two, interesting conversation. We talk about Secretary Modley, former acting SecNav Modley. He took a number of swings, and I would not characterize them as jabs. They are right hooks at Secretary of Defense Esper's Battle Force 2045 plan. So we talk about that. Then I made on an impromptu deal. Each one of the Mensa brothers, the national security advisor for France, President Macron, and the French, again, if you haven't seen the news, there's evidently a woman who was decapitated in a church in France. It's being categorized as a terrorist attack. And what that means is somebody who's avenging Allah being dishonored does so by murdering French civilians with a knife in a church, beheading one of them, a woman, who went to church less than 24 hours ago. So the French have this thing going on with the Muslim faith, with free speech, and so they were all asked, what is the future of that? After that, we talked about, am I being overly optimistic in the things I see vis-a-vis the United States and China, Intel sharing agreement with India, U.S., India, Japan, Australia, you know, with a more robust annual exercise. Coast Guard headed to the Western Pacific. Are all those things indicative that we're starting to see a broader response to China? So you'll hear them chime in about that. And then we talked about comments made by Tristan Harris in that interview. And that is their thoughts on regulating the internet social media company. So we talk about that. And then kind of on the impromptu, I threw out the information war that gets waged over police operations. And police departments, right, seem woefully unprepared to get the truth out as they know it. And they know a bunch of it right after these events happen. And in the absence of them being able to get that information out, the narrative that gets put out there is police hunted down and murdered another black man. And if you, there's no way, right? Can you say that about what happened in Philadelphia? And I'm not sure why police departments don't get their shit together. They've got to know that they've got to get whatever portion of that story they can release to include body cam footage, audio, that the defense, the actions that their police officers took, so that you don't have a portion, it's for the public good, so you don't have a portion of your city burning down. Right? You cannot cede the narrative because somebody will give you one. And you'll do so at the public peril of your community that you've sworn an oath to protect and serve. So you have an obligation to get it out there, but they don't. So, anyhow, you'll hear that in hour two. So, on a Thursday, do not be afraid to go change somebody's life. All right? Post-traumatic winning. Can I talk to you? You know there's nothing wrong with you, right? Can I show you something? And whoop out those three goals and 10 commandments, and don't be afraid to change somebody's life. On that note, have a great one. On a Thursday, All Marine Radio. Out.